Chapter 3. The nation guards its highest tribute for valor jealously. In the Korean War, only 77 medals of honor were awarded, with 5,720,000 personnel engaged. Of the 16,112,566 U.S. Armed Forces mobilized in World War II, only 292 medals of honor were awarded. The Army reveres its Medal of Honor men, living and dead, above all others. A theater commander who later became president, and a president who had formerly been an artillery captain, both said that they would rather have the right to wear the Medal of Honor than be president of the United States. After Abraham Lincoln signed the Medal of Honor bill on July 12, 1862, the decoration was bestowed in multitude, on one occasion to every member of a regiment. The first Medal of Honor was awarded by Secretary of War Stanton on March 15, 1863, to a soldier named Parrott, who had been doing a bit of work in Mufti behind enemy lines. Counting medals that were later revoked, about 2,300 of them were awarded in the Civil War era, up to 1892. Hundreds were poured out upon veterans of the Indian campaigns, specifying neither locales nor details of bravery beyond bravery in scouts and actions against the Indians. In 1897, for the first time, eyewitness accounts were made mandatory, and applications could not be made by the candidate for the honor, but had to be made by his commanding officer or some other individual who had personally witnessed his gallantry in action. The recommendation had to be made within 1 year of the feat of arms. Since 1897, when modern basic requirements were set down, only 577 medals of honor have been awarded to a total of 25 million Americans in arms, which is why the presence of a medal winner can bring full generals to their feet saluting, and has been known to move them to tears. In 1904, the medal was protected from imitators and jewelry manufacturers when it was patented in its present form by its designer, Brigadier General George L. Gillespie. On December 19, 1904, he transferred the patent to W. H. Taft and his successor or successors as Secretary of War of the United States of America. In 1916, the Congress awarded two Medal of Honor winners a special status, providing the medal had been won by an action involving actual conflict with the enemy, distinguished by conspicuous gallantry or intrepidity at the risk of life above and beyond the call of duty. The special status provided that the Medal of Honor winner may travel free of charge in military aircraft. His son may get presidential assistance in an appointment to West Point or Annapolis. If he is an enlisted man, $2 extra per month is added to his pay, and when he reaches the age of 65, he becomes eligible to receive a pension of $120 per year, from which, if he smokes one package of cigarettes a day, he would have $11.85 left over for rent, food, hospitalization, entertainment, education, recreation, philanthropies, and clothing. An Army board was convened in 1916 to review all instances of the award of the Medal of Honor since 1863, to determine whether or not any Medal of Honor had been awarded or issued for any cause other than distinguished conduct involving actual conflict with the enemy. 911 names were stricken from the list, and lesser decorations were forthwith created so that, as Congress had demanded, the Medal of Honor would be more jealously guarded. There was every reason for the awe in which Medal of Honor men were held. Some of their exploits included such actions as had taken 8 prisoners, killing 4 of the enemy in the process, while one leg and one arm were shattered, and he could only crawl because the other leg had been blown off. Edwards. Had captured 110 men, 4 machine guns, and 4 howitzers. Mallon and Gumperts. Wounded 5 times, dragged himself across the direct fire of 3 enemy machine guns to pull 2 of his wounded men to safety amid 69 dead and 203 casualties. Holderman. Singly destroyed a 14-man enemy ambush of his battalion, and in subsequent actions, with his legs mangled by enemy grenade and shot through the chest, died, taking a charge of 8 enemy riflemen, killing them. Baker. Held his battalion's flank against advancing enemy platoons, used up 200 rounds of ammunition, crawled 20 yards under direct fire to get more, only to be assailed by another platoon of the enemy, ultimately firing 600 rounds, killing 60, and holding off all others to be one of 23 out of 240 of his comrades to survive the action. Knappenberger. A defective phosphorus bomb exploding inside his plane, blinding and severely burning him. The radio operator scooped up the blazing bomb in his arms and with incalculable difficulty hurled it through the window. Irwin. Raymond waited in the rose garden of the White House while an assistant press secretary tried to talk to him. It was a bonny, sunny day. Raymond was stirred by the building near him, moved by the color of the green, green grass. Raymond was torn and shamed, and he felt soiled everywhere his spirit could feel. Raymond felt exalted, too. He felt proud of the building near him, and proud of the man he was about to meet. Raymond's mother was across the garden with the press people, pulling her husband along behind her, explaining with brilliant smiles and leers when necessary that he was the new senator and Raymond's father. Raymond, fortunately, could not hear her, but he could watch her hand out cigars. They both handed out cigars, whether the press people wanted cigars or not. Raymond's mother was dressed up to about $800 worth of the best taste on the market. The only jarring note was the enormous black purse she carried. It looked like a purse. It was a portable cigar humidor. She would have given the press people money, Raymond knew, but she had sensed somehow that it would be misunderstood. All the cameras were strewn about in the grass while everybody waited for the president to arrive. Raymond wondered what they would do if he could find a sidearm someplace and shoot her through the face, through that big toothy flapping mouth. Look how she held Johnny down. Look how she could make him seem docile and harmless. Look how she had kept him sober and had made him seem quiet and respectable as he shook hands so tentatively and murmured. Johnny Iselin was murmuring. He was crinkling his thick lips and making them prissy as he smirked under that great fist of a nose. And two of the photographers, they must be his mother's tame photographers, were listening to him as though he were harmless. The airport. Oh, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. She had got the AP photographer by the fleshy part of his upper right arm. And she had got Johnny by the fleshy part of his upper left arm, and she had charged them forward across that concrete apron at the National Airport, yelling at the ramp men, "Get Shaw off first! Get that sergeant down here!" And the action and the noises she made had pulled all 30 news photographers and reporters along behind her at a full run, while the television newsreel truck had rolled along sedately abreast of her, filming everything for the world to see that night. And thank God they were not shooting with sound. The lieutenant had pushed him out of the plane, and his mother had pushed Johnny at him, and Johnny had pulled him down the ramp so he wouldn't look too much taller in the shot. Then, to make sure, Raymond's mother had yelled, "Get on that ramp, Johnny, and hang on to him!" Johnny gripped his right hand and held his right elbow and towered over him. Raymond's mother didn't say hello. She hadn't seen him for over 2 years, but she didn't say hello, and neither did Johnny. Thank God they were a family who didn't waste a lot of time on talking, Raymond thought. Johnny kept grinning at him insanely, and the pupils of his eyes were open at about F.09 with the sedation she had loaded into him. The pressmen were trying to keep their places in a tight semicircle, and as always in one of those public riots where every man had been told to get the best shot, the harshest, most dominating shouter finally solved it for all the others. One big Italian-looking photographer yelled at nobody at all, "Get the mother in there, for Christ's sake! Senator, get your wife in there, for Christ's sake!" Then Raymond's mother caught on that she had goofed, but good, and she hurled herself in on Raymond's offside and hung off his neck, kissing him again and again until his cheek glistened with spit, cheating to the cameras about 30 degrees and snarling at Johnny between the kisses, "Pump his hand, you jerk! Grin at the cameras and pump his hand! A TV newsreel is working out there! Can't you remember anything?" And Johnny got with it. It had taken about 7 minutes of posing, reposing, standing, walking toward the cameras. Then the photographers broke ranks, and Raymond's mother grabbed Johnny's wrist and took off after them. The assistant press secretary from the White House steered Raymond to a car, and the next time Raymond saw his mother, she was handing out cigars in the Rose Garden and paying out spurts of false laughter. Everybody got quiet all of a sudden, even his mother. They all looked alert as the president came out. He looked magnificent. He was ruddy and tall, and he looked so entirely sane that Raymond wanted to put his head on the president's chest and cry, because he hadn't seen very many sane people since he had left Ben Marco. He stood at attention, eyes forward. The President said, "At ease, soldier." The President leaned forward to pick up Raymond's right hand from where it dangled at his side, and as he shook it warmly, he said, "You're a brave man, Sergeant. I envy you, in the best sense of that word, because there is no higher honor your country has to give than this medal you will receive today." Raymond watched his mother edge over. With horror, he saw the jackal look in her eyes and in Johnny's. The President's press secretary introduced Senator Iselin and Mrs. Iselin, the sergeant's mother. The President congratulated them. Raymond heard his mother ask for the honor of a photograph with the President, then moved her two tame photographers in with a quick low move of her left hand. The others followed, setting up. The shot was lined up. Raymond's mother was on the President's left, Raymond was on the President's right, Johnny was on Raymond's right. Just before the bank of press cameras took the picture, Mrs. Iselin took out a gay little black-on-yellow banner on a brave little gilded stick and held it over Raymond's head. At least it seemed that she must have meant it to be held only over Raymond's head, but when the pictures came out in the newspapers the next day, then in thousands of newspapers all over the world beginning 3.5 years hence, and with shameful frequency in many newspapers after that, it was seen that the gay little banner had been held directly over the President's head, and that the lettering on it read, "Johnny Iselin's boy."